Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, and welcome to the IGN UK podcast, episode 710. And it's going to be an absolute storm for your ears today, which actually translates to we're all very busy because of Gamescom, and it might be a bit of a short one today. But hey, I'm joined by Emma Matthews.
Hello, how's it going?
Oh, it's going so well, Emma. The Americans are here in the office, and it's always a joy to have them around. But today we're also joined by Matthew Jones as well. Hello, Matthew.
What's up? How's it hanging?
Oh, it's just so good. But you know what? Despite it being a good day, it's also a day of mourning as well. Because we're here to discuss the Xbox 360 and how its storefront is shutting down. I know. Hold back the tears. It's all very, very sad. So, the news came out. I think it was actually yesterday that the Xbox 360 store is shutting down on July 29th of, 2024. So you still got a bit of time if you want to buy Limbo on the Xbox 360.
One of the ones that you can't get anymore.
I have no idea. Maybe Castle Crashers? I can't quite remember what's Castle left Crashers on Xbox anywhere. Arcade. Exactly. But I figured it might be nice to take a trip down memory lane and sort of think about our favorite Xbox 360 titles, our favorite Xbox 360 memories. Now, I want to sort of kick this off with, and I'll ask you, Emma, what was your sort of first, like, HD experience? Like, the first sort of, like, your first sort of moment when you realize, like, holy shit, next gen is here? Because I remember my specific moment, but I want to hear yours.
So, with games, it was when I saw Guitar Hero 3 on Xbox 360. I was amazed at how clear everything looked.
Oh, how about you, Matt?
I had just bought an HDTV, and I think I was playing Devil May Cry 4 on it.
Oh.
And I remember like waving my mum in, and I was like, oh, Mum, you got to check this out. You got to see Devil May Cry 4 in high definition. She didn't know what was going on, but I'm sure she appreciated
it. Did you have your Xbox 360 before you got a HDTV, and then did you make that transition on the day?
I think if I'm putting it together, I'd been playing it for a while, but I hadn't had the true HD experience yet. I got the 360 for Gears of War, I think. That was the system seller for me.
No, that's fair. I mean, I remember going down to my local Blockbusters, and I don't even know what year this could have been. This might have been 2006, or maybe it was just like very late 2005. Maybe they had like a little demo kiosk for the 360. But I saw Call of Duty 2, and it was the most beautiful, crispest, clear
it was like you were
game
there.
I've ever seen. I know, it was like I was in World War II. No, thank God. But it was amazing because, you know, I'd been a PS2 boy for years, and jumping from a shitty CRT. We had a lovely CRT, which I'm really gutted we just fucking binned for no reason. Like, oh, I've got HDTV. I know, we're idiots if we only knew. But I just remember seeing what HD graphics looks like. Like the HDMI cable was this scary new thing because I was used to component, baby. Oh, I wanted that.
I'm a SCART boy through and through.
Yeah, exactly. But I figured it'll be nice to sort of talk about our three memorable games from the Xbox 360 generation. And, you know, maybe you might have heard of a few of these, whoever's listening. Maybe you haven't. We're all going to find out. But Matt, I'd like to kick off with you. What was one of your prime Xbox 360 memories when it comes to games?
When I think about the Xbox 360, I think of like the sort of risk-taking that you really can't do anymore. Mm. There were a lot of games that came out for it that were just kind of okay, and yet like that was good enough. Like I was playing everything at the time. I think I've talked about it on this show before, but I was at university and I would go to the Blockbuster every Friday and I would pick up whatever the new release was. And that's all I'd do. Yeah. I'd like play it entirely through finish and then I'd give it back on Monday. And I'd pay like no money doing it, which meant that I was playing like literally everything regardless of quality. So I want to do a little bit of an honorable mention for Rogue Warrior, which is absolutely terrible. Never Dead, which is kind of exciting. You're a little zombie man whose head can fly off and roll around. That was pretty cool. And a game called The Club as well, which was...
Oh, well, I remember The Club. That was... Mm-hmm. Was that like the online-only like third-person shooter?
Yeah, exactly. So it was like time attack stuff. So it's something that has since been like replicated in a bunch of different games, like what came out last year that I really liked? The card one, Neon White, really was that again. But it just was a kind of new idea or a new way of experiencing that thing. And that really felt like that's what the Xbox 360 was. It was like just enough high fidelity, but also production value could be kind of low, which meant that you could get really weird stuff. And we also like AAA development hadn't completely taken over. So publishers were still putting out a lot of stuff, whereas now big publishers are maybe only putting out like a handful of things every year. So they would just, you know, they'd have the license to be doing something that they had no reason to do and it would still sell. And so that's what I think about when I think about the Xbox 360, people like taking risks in a way that they don't really now. And so my first one that I really want to talk about is, of course, 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, which is an excellent little shooter, is significantly better than it has any right to be. Have either of you played this?
So I haven't played Blood in the Sand, but I think I did play 50 Cent, I think Bulletproof, was it, on the PS2? And I was dog shit at that, and I never touched any 50 Cent products again in my life.
Yeah.
I haven't played it, but I have seen like gameplay and stuff from it, and I've heard it mentioned a lot of times before.
Well, I will give you the rundown of what happens in 50 Cent Blood in the Sand. 50 Cent is doing a gig in an unnamed country in the Middle East. I'm pretty sure it's unnamed. We'll say it's unnamed for the purpose of this.
That's good.
And he's doing a gig, and the promoter of the gig puts up a skull, a crystal skull that's designed almost exactly like the Damien Hirst thing. I think even in the development of this game, 50 Cent saw the Damien Hirst skull and was like, yeah, I want that in my game. So... he has this as collateral, but it gets stolen as he's doing the gig. And in order for him to get paid for doing this gig, he has to go around and shoot everybody.
That seems like very incriminating on 50 Cent's part. How true to life is Blood in the Sand?
It's a one-to-one retelling of 50 Cent's origin story. And so the shooting's fine, like it's actually like fairly good, like. But the thing that really sells it, that's the important thing to know, is that there's a dedicated swearing button, and that swear,
oh wow,
it adds to your score. So you should basically constantly be pressing the swearing button, but you can unlock harsher and harsher swears as the game continues. So
you've got like a skill tree for
absolutely.
Oh, that's sick.
And that's amazing. Get, wow.
I think you unlock more abilities with the score. So yeah, it incentivizes you to constantly be swearing by pushing a dedicated swearing button. It's great. There's nothing like it.
What did your parents think of that? Did they ever walk in the room while you were just mashing that button?
I'm sure I must have been 18 by the time this came out. So,
Fair enough. Not as bad then.
That's what I was going to say, because I remember specifically my mum saying, like, Jesse, I'm never going to buy you Grand Theft Auto. Mm-hmm. But then, like, that Christmas, she got me the Scarface video game.
Nice.
She got me, like, True Crime and stuff. It's just, like, parents just knew GTA was evil.
Yeah.
But anything else that was an 18, it's like, it's all good. And horrific things happen in Scarface, but it's all good. It's all good as long as it isn't GTA.
I never played the Scarface game, but I had heard that it has a balls meter.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think... if you increased your balls, which is a dreadful thing to say, from memory, you then have like a slow-mo, like rage sort of mode that lets you just target enemies quickly and blow them apart.
Great.
But it's he does mention his balls a lot in that game. But you know what? If you're talking about like PS2 generation and stuff, we can be discussing balls all day. But sadly, that's not going to be happening in this episode. How about yourself, Emma?
So one of the, like I mentioned, I was amazed the first time I saw Guitar Hero 3. I completely somehow missed 1 and 2. So I was actually at my friend's house, and whenever we'd go over to her house, she would like steal her brother's Xbox 360 and we'd play games on that in her room. And she was like, I've got this new game. It's called Guitar Hero. It's really cool. And she brought out the controller and I was like, okay, This is amazing. Whatever we're about to do is about to be something I'm going to remember, right?
Yeah.
I played this game on her TV. I was just like, I have to have this. It was amazing. Like, all the set list is really, really good for that game. Like, to be honest, of all the Guitar Hero games, I think that's still, like, my favorite one. And yeah, it was just, like, the first time, like, seeing it so, like, clear as well. Just, like, look how clear this game is. I can see, like, all the writing properly. Like, I can read it. It's just amazing. And yeah, I got hooked on it at her house, went home and like pestered my parents. I think it came out in the October or something. And so I was going on and on at them. Like, I want this for Christmas. I have to have it. Got it on Christmas Day. Was obviously terrible at it. So the whole of Christmas Day was just my parents listening to me like struggle just my way through Slow Ride.
Fucking up each match.
Yeah, it was but it was just great. And yeah, like even now sometimes it's like it's one of those games that's like a kind of a comfort game where you can just go back to it, you're like, I'll play through it again. I am better at it now. I can get past Slow Ride.
I was gonna say, because like Guitar Hero would have been like one of the earlier games which would have had a shit ton of DLC. Were you able to convince your parents to be like, hey, I've already bought the game, but now I want to buy more of the game, so please give me extra money so I can buy like $5.99's worth of fucking, I don't know, AC/DC music or some shit? Like, were you able to convince them to give you like Xbox Live Arcade and to like get, was it, how did you buy DLC back then? Did you have to get like Microsoft points? I can't quite remember.
Yeah, it was Microsoft points.
They weren't having any of that.
You've already bought a game. What's that?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing as well, right? So you have to get the controller with it. And my sister would want to play too, but we only had one controller. So it was like, okay, we're going to have to keep swapping between the two of us to play through this game. And I think there was at least one song in it as well where you'd unlock it by playing like co-op. And so that whole time, I would hear that song in the menu and I'd be like, what is that song? I can't find it on here at all. And it turned out, that's how you unlocked it. I found out years later and I was like, oh, like for me, it was just like, there's like this phantom song on here that I have no idea like who it is or like what it's from. And it turns out it's just because we didn't have enough of a controller and we had to share.
Oh, that is pretty peaky. I do, talking about like a sort of comfort game, for me, that would be the Elder Scrolls, I think 4, Oblivion. Because I remember my mum getting me an Xbox 360 Elite. And I can't remember what year specifically it was. It might have been 2007 or 2008. But she got me Call of Duty 3, Lost Planet, and the Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
That
was like the best fucking lineup ever. And like, I had a few mates who had like, you know, the sort of normal like pleb Xbox 360s. But then when I opened the box and it was the Elite, I was over the fucking moon. That shit looked sick and premium. But I played like a few semi, like you'd play GTA on the PS2, San Andreas, that was like an orange haze of just pixels and like just a mess. But then loading up Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and there's one moment I specifically remember where I was like, holy shit, this is the future of games. You create your character, you sort of go through like this little prison escape section, and then you leave and you're finally in the sort of open world proper. And there's like a little dock in front of you, a little river, and then like a little enemy camp in front of you, and sort of an outstretched world just ready to explore. And looking back at it now, and I have a picture of what the actual area looks like now, it looks like dog shit. It is the most low res looking thing. I'm counting in all of like maybe 15 trees in the distance. But that moment as a kid, like sort of seeing what, it's weird to say, like a next gen open world game, mm-hmm. what that looks like. Because that particular scene there was sort of what it was. It's the view that launched the HD generation for me. And Oblivion as well is like, it's one of the most comfy sort of games, I think, I still like to go back to, because every single character is voiced and they all sound dreadful. Like, there's only like
conversation system sucks too.
Yeah. Like, every bloke sounds the same and all have a deep voice and stuff. Then you have like the one woman who sounds like she's been smoking cigarettes for 50 years. She voices the elves and stuff like that. But it was one of the good reasons to own an Xbox 360. And it was sort of my first introduction to an RPG as well.
I think, I can't remember if I'd have played any like other RPGs before, but I remember a friend of mine having it on PC, and me like had never heard of it before, but I thought that it was like really nerdy, right? Like that you were, you know, doing spells and being an elf.
Oh,
and
you get to play
around.
An elf, yeah.
And he was at a bit, I can still remember pretty vividly, that he was like talking about how he'd just become a vampire. And he like in a Daedric temple at the time, like looting it.
Yeah.
And I was like, not only can you just have this thing happen to you, but you can go and like loot a temple. And you're telling me that there's like 100 of these that I could go to. I was like, oh, mate, I'm in immediately. Like, what other game would have offered you both of those things before?
Exactly. And you know what? Like, Elder Scrolls Oblivion is the first time I saw a member transitioning into a dickhead, because that was the first game that let you just sort of kill anyone, and then you can be the, you can be then join the Dark Brotherhood, and then you could just be a murderer
and
for
the Dark
rest
Brotherhood
of the game.
Quests in that are it's that fucking some banging. Of the best thing that's in games. Yeah. Honestly, it's some of the best bit of video gaming.
Exactly. It was the first sort of RPG, because like when you say RPG back then, it's like my mind went to Final Fantasy, and I was like, "Oh, Final Fantasy, that's for nerds. I want to play Elder Scrolls," just because it was really pretty and just. Oh man, it was one hell of a game. I wouldn't mind, you know what? I might just bring the Steam Deck to Germany for Gamescom and see if I can load up. It's probably going to control like shit on there, but you know what? It's an experience I want to have. It'll take me back. Oh man, yeah. Matt, what's your next memorable title?
So another instance of somebody taking a risk that doesn't necessarily pay off. I really enjoy the moxie of Obsidian Studios making Alpha Protocol. Either of you check this one out?
Tell us all about it, Matt. Go on.
I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if it's worth going back. But at the time, it was one of those, like, just good enough, like, very inventive and interesting. So it's like an RPG, but you're a spy. And so you'll be sent on all of these missions to different parts of the world. You'll have lads to shoot there and conversations to have.
Yeah.
And it's almost really interesting. and it needed like 2 more months polish, and it would have been absolutely fine. There are some people that have modded it to like kind of maybe fix it, but you can't like...
That's what I was going to say. I remember the reviews coming out for Alpha Protocol, and... Again, like I was at that point when probably that game came out, like I was into Gears, I was into COD. So I wanted like grimy, muscly men shooting and killing each other because that's what I was into. And then Alpha Protocol came out and everyone looks like action men, all really plasticky and like really bad, I don't know, beards and mustaches that you could customize your character with. And it didn't quite look good enough, but it seems like it has like a pretty big following
or
fan base.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
the thing that I think is really cool about it, you mostly just shoot lads, like, but there's one mission.
I love games like that.
there's one mission where if you show up wearing your like tactical equipment, like you're there ready to shoot somebody, a guy will comment on it and he'll be like, why have you shown up for a mission when this is clearly just a meeting between us? You should be in a suit. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that does sound quite cool. Yeah, like stuff like that, like it feels like more of those kind of games where you have more of those kind of, I don't know, dynamic kind of options only really opened up, at least in memory for me, with the Xbox 360, same for Oblivion, same for something like Alpha Protocol. Mm-hmm. I don't remember there anything being quite like that on, the PS2 and stuff.
I played a little bit of, some games. I think Final Fantasy Tactics had some stuff like this.
Okay.
And Tactics Ogre definitely had like branching narrative stuff, but not like this.
Yeah, no, that's fair. What about you, Emma? What's next on your trip down memory lane?
My next one. It's a lovely trip. It's also a trip that I think a lot of people remember being kind of a horrible trip because it's like, it's a mean game. It's Dark Souls.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. So have you both played Dark Souls?
I have, yeah.
Played the first one. I mean, I remember a friend, I think, pre-ordering it for the Xbox 360. And then I think I remember going over to his, playing it for an hour and thinking, that is the shittest game I've ever played. I'm never going to touch it again. I don't know what your first experience was like.
It's so interesting how many people have that perspective as well. Like, and then have since learned to love it, but they were like, no one will ever like this. This sucks.
Yeah, mine was kind of like that to begin with. I saw someone else play it and I was like, oh, you know, it looks really grey and it looks really hard. And like, I'm not sure about that at all. And then tried it for myself and it's like, the intro is so strong. I think because it kind of lulls you into this like false sense of security with like that very first boss and stuff. And it's like, this isn't so bad. And then you get out into the big wide world and you're like, actually, this is horrible. Everything's trying to kill me. Like, I'm so weak. And just like, but I fell in love with that experience. It's like after you've sort of died for your, like you're maybe your 20th or 30th death, you're like, okay, I think I'm starting to get it.
I really love that it's like that opening as well. I don't just mean the cathedral bit at the beginning. Like when you first go to Firelink and you start like going along the main story path, it is just designed in such a way that like it forces you to just make decisions and like learn what's happening around you. And it feels difficult, but it's like, you know, it is just, they're playing a joke on you. They're saying that you don't know how it works yet and you're gonna... And it just rules in a way that nothing else does.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I think as well, the first sort of time you find a shortcut to somewhere, or, you know, you've sort of gone off the path, you feel like, oh, you know, I'm going off on my own, I'm going down this part, I don't know what's ahead. And then you end up back somewhere where you've seen like a closed gate or something before, and you're like, wow, like this is so cool, I had no idea I was going to pop out here.
The secrets as well that people would like, it was one of the first games I think that I played with people at the same time, and they'd tell you like, oh, you've got to shoot the dragon's tail in order to get a really cool sword at the beginning of the game.
The Drake sword, I love that sword, it's so good at the beginning of the game. But yeah, you're right, like discovery is like, you're rewarded so much in that game, but also as you're going along, you kind of fear, why did anyway, like fear what's ahead constantly. It's like, I'm scared what's ahead, but I have to push forward. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works out and you get something really cool, or you discover something like that, like a secret, or, you know, you try and open a chest and, you know, for a certain part of the game, it's like, oh, there's always a treat inside. And then suddenly they're like, no. Now I felt, it's a mimic.
I felt really lucky, though, that I played Demon's Souls beforehand as well.
So I kind of knew
what I was in for. Like, I'd gotten over the feeling of, like, oh, this is an intensely difficult game that's, like, unforgiving and a little bit unfair. Because I'd played the more unforgiving and unfair one beforehand.
That's really cool. Yeah, I hadn't played that. So it was all new and all very scary, but all exciting, too.
I was going to say, I feel like Dark Souls is probably the first difficult game I ever really played. Like, I was playing, like, you know, third-person action adventure games and first-person shooters on my PS2 and, you know, whatever. But Dark Souls was the first game, at least when I played it at my mates, I was like, this fucking blows ass. I'm never touching this shit again. And then you see a few other videos and you're like, oh, well, I really love, like, knights in bulky armor and fucking big claymores and shit. Like, I want to chop stuff down. And then eventually playing it and then discovering I'm still shit at this, but it's not it's not too bad. And especially, because what year was Dark Souls? Was that like 2009 or 8? I can't quite remember. But like, that was when I first even started like going on YouTube and being like, I need to know specifically like what strats are and stuff, because I didn't give a shit about strategy before in any sort of game I was playing. I was just like, I'm just going to give it a go. And even then, I'd buy little cheat books from the corner store and shit like that. But Dark Souls was the first difficult game I played where it was like, I need to actually do a little bit of prep and go on YouTube and see what people are, you know, see what strats they're using at fucking 360p, because capture cards back then looked like fucking bumhole and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you just couldn't get any good looking footage back then.
That actually, yeah, oh, it's such a specific time, because I remember I would watch people playing Guitar Hero as well, but they'd be just recording footage off of their TV.
Yeah.
They just have a camera pointed at it, and you'd be like, oh my god, you've done such a great Guitar Hero run.
Yeah.
It was like, I think that you could probably chart a lot of people's interest in getting capture cards and stuff like that, because they wanted to just post like video game times, right? Like, or they wanted to show off that they'd beaten like Bark at the Moon on Guitar Hero.
I mean, the dream of getting a 720p capture card that didn't look like shit was, it was definitely on my mind back then. But I mentioned before, one of the games I got for Christmas was Lost Planet. And I'm going to be talking about its extreme conditions right now. So if you don't know what Lost Planet is, it's sort of a third person, almost over the shoulder shooter, I guess. And Lost Planet takes place on a planet that has extreme conditions. It's very cold and it's a very desolate planet full of disgusting, like orangey bugs and stuff. And the one thing that drew me in, because I remember opening the Argos catalog and like just seeing the cover for it and thinking, oh, it's like a...
Like a winter world.
Yeah, it's like a spec ops soldier in like this lovely winter wonderland. I was like, that looks fucking rad. Mum, I want that, please. And she got it for me. But Lost Planet is a sort of a lonely, desolate third-person shooter that takes place on this really cold planet full of bugs. And it's... I just remember... And again, it goes back to just the visuals of the Xbox 360. And if you had like the TV... for it, like the crisp snow, like the hard edges of like the aliens and the glow of like their weak spots and stuff. And the entire game mostly takes place on foot, but then every few missions and stuff you come across, I can't remember what they're called, I think they're called like vital suits, which were like snow mechs, and they had like Gatling guns and fucking rocket launchers and stuff, and you could like sometimes blow up buildings when the aliens are coming out. And to be honest, I barely remember the story, because it is one of those, it's one of those games where the story doesn't matter at all. You're just there to blow some fucking aliens. Yeah, exactly. Oh, but it was just one of those comfy games, because I remember even like potentially snowing that Christmas, and then I had like the alien snow game to play. And it was just like
a little hot chocolate with some marshmallows.
Yeah, it was just perfect. And like, and it sort of reminds me as well of the third Matrix film, which a lot of people don't love, but you know, like when I think Zion is getting attacked and everyone's in those big ass mechs with like Gatling guns.
Yeah, totally.
Like Lost Planet is just that, but in the snow. And if you're not warm enough, you fucking die.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, because that's the thing that really stood out to me about that first game, is that like your heat is constantly ticking down. Like you've got to make it from space to space in order to be like actually be able to survive. And that was kind of a trend for like Capcom games at the time, because like. Dead Rising also had that like time mechanic. Like I think they were really pushing this idea of like you needed to be booking it. I also really love about the Lost Planet series that every game is kind of different. Like Lost Planet 2 is a massive departure. It's like a multiplayer action game set in the like jungle.
Jungle and swamps and stuff like that. I mean, another thing that I loved as well, I think this is like one of the earlier games I remember playing that had like a grappling hook. If I wanted to scale up on the snow here or the ice or like this building here, then you shoot out and you just like fly right up towards it and stuff. And I feel like it's going to sound so lame to say like, this is when games were cool.
They were.
No, because like I remember like going down to Game and being like, oh, you can get like two PS2 games for £5. And they were dog shit, like fucking Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and 24 the video game and stuff. I was like, I don't want to play any of this shit. But it was what was cheap and what was available. But then getting those, I keep saying it, but just like those crystal clear looking games once you eventually got a HDTV. And they were just bigger and louder and just prettier. And I loved it. and I want to go back because now everything is too clear and crystal. I was having this issue when I was playing Returnal. I think everything looks so vibrant and colorful and just realistic that everything just sort of blends into one. Like, I have more trouble now focusing when I'm playing a hectic game compared to a hectic game on like the PS2 or the 360, because like you just know what you can pick up and what you can shoot compared to what you can't. Mm-hmm. I sound like an old man saying this.
You really do.
Kids don't know how good they've got it these days. You talking about grappling hooks, by the way, really reminded me of another 360 game. And I couldn't remember what it was called, so I just typed wife arm game.
Bionic Commando.
Bionic Commando, because the ending is that your wife has been your arm the whole game.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Yeah. I've been planning on playing the game, actually. Oh, shit. I mean, you know, that's just going to make the experience a lot more special, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't really mind. Oh, shit. Well, Emma, what's your sort of final big 360 masterpiece that you have in your mind?
My final one is Fallout 3. I was completely amazed by it when it came out. Like, just the whole style of it, like the whole 50s, like post-apocalyptic, like, look, I've just fell in love with it. It was like, this is the most amazing thing ever.
Had you played the other two beforehand?
No, so I hadn't at all. So yeah, I was like, I'm starting at 3, same with Guitar Hero 3. it's always 3 for me. But yeah, I was just like, this is so cool. And I'd like, some of the quests in that game are just so memorable as well. Yeah. Like
the Oasis quest as well is the one that always stands out to me, that like utterly kills me that that's even in there.
Yeah. What happens in the Oasis one again?
It's the tree stuff. So
That is really good. The Power of the Atom one with Megaton. I was just like, I was so shocked playing that for the first time.
Is Megaton like the fucking... I'm thinking... That's Megaton is like where you can nuke that town.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Oh, I was thinking of like the Optimus Prime dickhead who like starts shouting out like kill commies and stuff by the end of the game. Like, I can't remember what mission it is. Prime. I was like, yeah, Liberty Prime. He's a legend. Love that dude.
That Republic of Dave mission as well, I really love, where you like rig the election so that like somebody that shouldn't be in charge is in charge. Oh, it's so good.
There are so many good ones. There's one where you steal like the Declaration of Independence as well, which is like, that was really,
that
really
sounds
good.
Sick.
God, what else? Oh, the one where it's like two competing superheroes that are in a town that are like trying to defend everybody from the ants, I think, right?
That is
God,
really
what a game.
I really remember that sort of, at least like the start of that generation of games, all of them were like brown and like muddy and like dark
green. Same color
green,
palette,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like Fallout 3 is an ugly ass looking game. Like, if you played on the 360 now, it looks clapped. It's still a fun game to play. But it's the same for like GTA 4 as well. GTA 4 was the first, well, my older brother was allowed to buy it. I was allowed to play it because he bought it, which is some dumb rules. It doesn't make any sense. But I remember that like being quite brown and just sort of beigey, sort of sunset-y kind of... I feel like a lot of games of that generation were... And I feel like it was because of like Unreal Engine 3, that sort of tech. Like, everything was just brown all the time.
I remember that, like, one of the reasons I think that Dark Souls was so like slimy is that the engine that it's built on is really good at doing like kind of liquid. Like, it was the first time that we could make a thing look like it's got goo all over it, which, yeah.
Yeah, like when you go into the depths and stuff and when you're like right at the bottom of Blight Town, like, it's disgusting down there. Like, and all the creatures look really gross as well, like they're all glistening and stuff. Yeah.
Blech.
It's beautiful.
Yes,
though.
Please.
Beautiful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, talking about lack of color, want to discuss my last personal favorite, which is The Saboteur. Have any of you guys heard of The Saboteur?
Love The Saboteur.
No, tell us about it, Jesse.
Oh, God. So The Saboteur is a third-person sort of action shooter game which takes place in Paris, right as World War II is about to kick off, right when like the Nazi occupation of Paris is about to occur. And you play as, I think an Irish like mechanic car.
You're a race car mechanic.
Yeah, race car mechanic called like Sean Devlin. And, you know, like you're always hanging out in the pubs and shit and just getting into scraps and stuff. And then all of a sudden the Nazis come around and have to ruin everything, as they always do in video games and in real life. But the one thing I remember about this game is that the majority of it, I'll say the majority, it sort of starts out sort of like in full color. You know, you're sort of going around doing a few like little fetch quest missions, and then suddenly the Nazis come in and the whole game sort of like dips into like black and white color scheme. And as you liberate different parts of the map, it brings the color back in, like the like Paris Liberated forces start coming in and stuff. And I just remember thinking like, that is a mad decision to have for near enough, like, I wouldn't say it's a AAA game, but it was like, it had some like big money behind it and stuff. Like it was a pretty sick game. And on top of that as well, it was almost like Hitman-esque as well, because it had a few stealth elements where you could knock a Nazi out, dress up as him, like infiltrate a base, and then, you know, plant C4 on their tanks and stuff to then bounce out. And then you can like, you know, I was going to say derobe yourself. You can't quite do that in the game, but you can go back into civilian clothing and
there
stuff.
There is nudity if you had the special edition pass. Oh my God. I don't know if you remember this. It's like a room that you can go to where there are people with their boobs out. But you could only do it if you had the code for like having a new copy. So that inaccessible anymore. That. Can't have it.
I know. And I have a very cringy memory of going to game and my mum buying this game for me. It's always tied back to, you know, she has to buy the games for me because I was like 12 years old. And I remember it had a little sticker saying there was a DLC, like, I was going to say pamphlet, like a little, you know, DLC inlay inside. And I was like, oh, what's this? Free DLC? Sick. Yeah. Open it up. And then it's just like this sort of shady backroom DLC and stuff in some strip club. And I was like, what the fuck?
I'm not telling and her then, I've got this.
Yeah, I know. I had to sort of install the DLC when my mum was asleep and then check out. And I was like, I am very disappointed in this.
Great. Did you have your console like in the living room? Was it like a shared sort of situation in the living room?
Nah, so we had it because I shared a room with my older brother. So we sort of had the HD TV in the living room, then like our old like sort of like tubey CRT TV in our bedroom. So I'd like ferry the console back and forth, but I bought the Xbox 360 into the bedroom to install that DLC, and we were both very disappointed and never looked at it again. But the game itself is very, very good. I don't know if it's available on Steam anymore or anything like that, but...
Do you remember the ending, by the way? It actually has one of my favorite video game endings. I don't know if you recall it.
I can't quite remember the ending. I feel like I remember... Does it take place on like the top of the Eiffel Tower or something like that? Yes, that's
so it. So you rock up to it. You're like, all right, I'm ready for this like massive scrap with all the Nazis. I'm going to kick them out of Paris once and for all. Going to the Eiffel Tower, I'm ready to...
That's exactly what happened in World War II as well. Just the massive scrap up by the Eiffel Tower.
Totally, yeah. It's actually one of my favorite historical facts that like Hitler was supposed to go to the top of the Eiffel Tower as like a little viewing visit, and all of the people that were like the part of the Paris resistance, like they cut the elevator cables so that he wasn't able to get the elevator, so he didn't go. I love that. So yeah, you show up to the Eiffel Tower, and all of the Nazis have like basically heard that the war's ending, that like none of them want to fight you anymore. They're all just like passive. So as you walk your way up, they're all just like not interested in having the scrap that you're there to have. It is like really, really cool.
Yeah, shit. I can't remember that. Like honestly, that's the thing. I don't think I would have specifically chosen the non-violent route, at least back then. Every sort of game I play involves me having to murder as many people as I can, as evident with the previous Baldur's Gate 3 chat we had.
Hell yeah.
But shit, yeah, the Saboteur was just amazing. And I can't remember exactly who put the Saboteur together, because they don't exist anymore. I'm trying to remember the company. I think, Pandemic Studios, the guys behind Mercenaries.
Yeah, yeah. And so that excited me too, because I love Mercenaries too. Like that's a great game.
That was one of my favorite co-op games. Actually on the Xbox 360 as well. The Mercenary series was pretty banging. But I think this was one of Pandemic Studios' last games, and then the studio sort of died. So if you want to play Pandemic's sort of final hurrah, then check out The Saboteur, because it is genuinely a pretty banging third-person action adventure game where you can blow up Nazis in Paris and restore the color back to Paris. How romantic. Matt, what's your big big final, big boy game.
I have to mention it because I don't think it gets its due. It is basically just a hidden Final Fantasy game. It's called Lost Odyssey. People might know that it was written by the Final Fantasy creator Hironobu Sakaguchi, and it had music by Nobu Uematsu. So it is essentially a Final Fantasy game. Just sounds like it. and it had just a really cool battle system, which was kind of like a rhythm game. You had a little circle that you had to hit as you were doing your attacks, and you could customize that depending on like how much more damage you wanted to do or how much likelihood of you achieving it. And then had this like front and back row like unit placement thing. So anybody that was in your party that you had in the back row took less damage as long as the people in the front row were healthier. Oh, that's kind of unique. Yeah, it was really... So you'd have like your magic classes back there, but they'd only be at risk if your front people started taking more damage. Really, really cool.
I was going to ask, was this the game that came on like 8 discs?
I don't really remember. I think maybe 2...
Okay.
Yeah, like weirdly, because I think that Microsoft really wanted to break into the Japanese market. There were this and Blue Dragon were like pretty.
Yes,
good,
I remember Blue Dragon as well. JRPGs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Didn't actually really take off in Japan, but were really well received over here. Because like everybody knows, the 360, like no one in Japan cared about it whatsoever. Everybody bought a PlayStation.
Yeah, I mean to be fair, like to PlayStation's credit, like. They had the fucking Spider-Man font on it. True. When I found that out, I was like, I want a PlayStation now. And also, like, you couldn't fucking watch Blu-rays. When I started actually caring about movies and shit, you couldn't watch them on the 360. You had to stick to DVDs. Yeah.
Could get an HD DVD little thing you could plug in. Who's doing that?
Yeah, not me. Mm-hmm. Fuck that. I did see one of those HD DVD drives at CEX. I think they'll send it for like 12 quid. And I was like, I don't even think you can even buy HD DVDs. Yeah.
I bet there's a couple movies where everybody's like, oh no, the real way to watch it is on HD DVD. Like, that's the format.
Oh God. No, thank you.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Thank you. Well, I think that sort of wraps up one of our, sort of our, you know, nostalgic little happy stroll down memory lane when it comes to the Xbox 360. I'm emotional because
thanks for going on this little journey with us.
It was a nice, yeah, I know. It was,
it was fantastic.
Yeah,
like I'm always sort of gutted when any sort of digital storefront closes down. It sort of happened with, I think, what was it, the 3DS, the Wii U, and stuff. And you know, to be fair, with the Wii U and any Nintendo digital storefront, there's always a ton of indie games that just like bloody vanish. and stuff. And the same is going to happen with the 360, like the Xbox Arcade. Mm-hmm. What was it? Fucking like the Doritos World Dash, which is essentially like Takeshi's Castle on the 360, sponsored by Doritos. It's fucking banging.
And it was free, and it had achievements, which was a big deal of the day.
Yeah, like genuinely, if you have a 360 and you can somehow download that, check it out. I think it was like Doritos World Dash or something, but
Crash Course.
Yes, Crash Course. That's it. That slapped. That game was sick. But since we are all so busy for Gamescom and we're all preparing things and getting ready for next week, which is going to be hectic, we don't have time for a game, but we do have time for feedback. And if you want to send your own feedback, obviously, you know the address is IGN UK. It's IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com.
The whole gag is that Cardi can't get the email right. I'd like that you've kept that alive.
Yeah, I'm really glad I did. But we do obviously have some feedback to read. So who's first? I believe it's Emma.
It is me. And we have an email from Louis. Louis says, "Dear IGN UK podcast team, being the fans of deeply serious cinema that we are, my girlfriend and I decided on the weekend to go and watch The Meg 2. Man. Wow.
Yes.
What a choice. Love it. however, this was no ordinary screening, but rather a Cineworld 4DX 3D screening. That is a mouthful. Wow. Which is described by Cineworld as the most exhilarating way to watch a film.
Lovely.
This sounds too full on. When I go to the cinema, I think like, oh, I'm going to sit. It's nice and dark. I'm going to lose myself.
Yeah,
in this movie.
I want
to
fall asleep. No.
Yeah, this sounds like an extreme experience. Okay, so Louis says, what this essentially amounts to is rows of seats jolting out like you're on some sort of static roller coaster and water and air being squirted at you from various angles.
Oh, they actually squirt water at you as well.
That's pretty. See, the only time I've kind of had that is when I've been to like a theme park, you know, where they have those like kind of sit down experiences. I didn't know they did that in the UK. So that's pretty cool. Glad we tried it as we've been curious for a while, but I can't say I'll be rushing back. The screening was surprisingly mostly full, which I found baffling at around £17 a pop. It wasn't exactly cheap either. My question is, do you see any of these gimmicks sticking? It feels like 3D has come and gone, and with the recent catchphrase being shouted by seemingly every publication to watch films on the biggest screens possible.
Including this podcast.
Yep. It's beginning to feel like you're not getting the full experience by sitting on the couch and just watching a movie. Big fan of the podcast. Thanks for all the laughs and entertainment over the years. And if watching The Meg 2 has taught me anything, it's that the sea and its creatures must be respected.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Lou. I would say me and my partner, we watched Meg 2 on its opening night in our local cinema because the trailer for it played before we watched Oppenheimer the weekend before, which is just a stupid place for it to be. I understand why we gave it a 4. It is a shockingly shit, just awful film. And there's barely any Megs in it. Well, there's a few Megs, but they are not as big as you would want a Meg to be. Like the poster is lying to you if you wanted a massive Meg. They are not as big as
they
appear.
If we could print some stickers that are like Megs maybe smaller than they appear.
But I think when it comes to those sort of like crazy little gimmicky things, I don't think I'd ever be bothered enough to watch anything in fucking, what was it? 3D, 4DX 3D. I don't think I want some old ass water being squirted in my face for 17 quid. I don't know. How about you guys?
Yeah, I feel like the gimmick is almost, it almost proves that the movie behind it must not be engaging enough to matter, you know? Right? Like if it were a good movie, you wouldn't have to do this. Like, imagine that they did do this for Oppenheimer, right? The bomb drops and the chair starts shaking. You'd think it was ridiculous, right?
I mean, I would feel like that's almost kind of rude as well. I don't know why. Like, that would really take me out of it if, like, wind started blowing in my face and, like, the chair started rocking when the fucking Trinity test occurred. Like, I don't want to feel that connected to it, you know?
Yeah.
What about you, Emma?
Yeah, I think, like, with regular films, I wouldn't want that at all. I think... Yeah, like when I've been to like theme parks, like the Disney parks, I think do it really well where you're having this kind of sit down and they build that whole experience around that. So they've got like this sort of sit down show you go into in the Animal Kingdom called It's Tough to Be a Bug. And it's all like these these little like bugs from Bug's Life, like jumping around and dancing and singing and stuff. And, you know, they sort of puff like air, and it's not like too much because it's for kids as well. So you don't want to, you know, scare them or anything. But there's one part of that that would always like freak me out as a kid going to see that like little show. And that's like right at the end of it. They're like, okay, everyone, like, that's the end of the show. Like, please remain in your seats and let the bugs leave. And they get the bugs. Well, it feels like the bugs are leaving under your seat. Yeah. So you kind of like, everyone in the whole cinema gets up like, oh, what's that? I think that can be done really well. And they have a few other like sort of little shows like that as well, where they'll have like, you know, they'll puff like certain smells at you or whatever if you're in a certain area. Like, I think they do something with like Beauty and the Beast, where it's like, you know, you're getting all the food and you can smell all these nice things. I think that's really cool. But yeah, for a regular film, I think maybe it would be a bit too much. Like,
yeah. I mean, I'd say when, you know, the latest Avatar came out, I went to a screening that was 3D variable frame rate, where I was jumping back between 24 and 48. And the shit was just so fucking weird. Like, I've watched films that people have made at 60 FPS. I watched The Hobbit at 48 FPS and stuff. But I think the jarring thing is having scenes and even like different background elements be at different frame rates in the same scene. You're watching someone talking at 24 and then someone like sneezes in the background, but that's at like 48 FPS for some reason. It was just, I can't imagine that catching on. Not saying I don't want, you know, new developments in cinema to occur, but I think they need to chill out with shit like that. Yeah. Choose one frame rate. Do not mix it.
My answer is just always, if it's good, you know, I'd love it. Yeah. If it worked, let's have loads of it. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, Oppenheimer at 120 FPS would be an amazing experience.
Interpolated as well. Yeah. Put a little cel-shaded font over it. Make it look all those, anime.
Yeah, all those dialogue scenes at blistering frame rates would be awesome. Mm-hmm. I think the next bit of feedback is from Rob, and it's for you, Matt.
Amazing. This is an email from Rob. Hello, UK IGN crew. Gamescom is rapidly approaching, and I'll be heading over for this for the first time this year as part of a holiday to Germany to see some friends who live in the south of Germany. We're going to go do the whole journey from Hertfordshire to Germany on the railways. I'm taking our Nintendo Switch to keep me occupied whilst shooting across the French and German countrysides. With this in mind, do you guys have any shorter travel game recommendations that could be completed in 15 to 20 hours? Don't have lots of time for gaming these days, so I'd love something to get stuck into that I can finish by the end of the week. Love the podcast. Best wishes and utmost respect for the sea. What I will say, completely ignoring your question for a second, make sure to get some currywurst.
Brilliant.
Have currywurst as soon as possible. It is absolutely the thing that you're in Cologne for. Go to the show, but also like explore Cologne too. It's a really lovely, beautiful city. Don't just go to the Meze and then like, you know, don't explore the city. It rules. Cologne's lovely.
Yeah, and I would say as well, if you're in Gamescom and you see one of us, feel free to say hello, unless we seem very busy and pissed off and like crying in a corner. But even then, you know, maybe a nice hello would be appreciated. But to answer your question, honestly, I would recommend Undertale. That's on the Switch, and that's like, what, 8 hours long? And stuff in Undertale's bloody banging.
First bit of Delta Room 2, I think, is on there.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe if you want something, it depends how you play it. Like Civilization 6 is on the Switch. You know, you could be a complete prick and start destroying everyone, or you could have a nice time building up your city. Mm-hmm. What about you guys? Any recommendations?
I was going to say it's Spelunky 2.
Hell yeah.
It's so good.
And I've never played a Spelunky game before.
I prefer the first one, personally, but that's just...
The first one is really good, yeah. Like, to be honest, I think you can get both of them. They did have them together on the Switch, actually, I think, in like a little combo kind of deal. But yeah, Spelunky 2, it's unforgiving as a platformer. Like, especially like the opening area is really, really mean. There are so many animals that will want to kill you, but... I could easily spend 15 hours just playing that, and you don't even have to finish it. Just the next, when you get to a new area, you'll just be happy enough that you've got there. It is really, really fun. And there are lots of cool secrets in that too.
I would say as well, before we move on, I brought my Switch in to the office today, and on the train, I was just playing a bit of Mario Kart 8. Like, you can't really go wrong with doing like a cup or two.
Yeah,
when you're traveling about.
You've got the two controllers attached to the thing, so if you get there with anybody else too, just, you know, flip
exactly
to them.
All right. This is a email from Rich, and he says, "Howdy, IGN crew. Long time, first time, and all that jazz. After Cardi waxing lyrical, business model aside, about Overwatch 2, I thought I'd polish off my rusty FPS skills and try a competitive shooter for the first time in years. It comes as a pleasant but massive shock to myself that I'm having a fabulous time, with one minor complaint, which leads nicely into my question slash main point. Am I getting old? The answer to this is a resounding yes. Are the menus of first-person shooters now excessively convoluted? I guess it's a positive that you can delve into a shooter to the depth you choose, but I feel myself getting a bit overwhelmed when looking at everything going on. Love to know your thoughts, Rich." And that's pretty much what I fucking said like 30 minutes ago about there's just too much shit and I can't handle it. But how do you feel?
There's a really good video that Cracked did when, I think it was Evolve came out, the like multi-person
shooter. Yeah.
And it was specifically about like the perspective of somebody that doesn't play games and somebody that plays them all the time. And it's like, how do you even take in the information that is being presented to you? Like, there's just so much that only really has any context if you've like been playing it for however many years and like seen what gets added incrementally. Like I try to imagine what it must be like for somebody to like literally your first time playing a game and then pick up like a modern FPS. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I mean, Emma, you play like a shit ton of first person shooters, don't you?
Yeah, it's like my favorite thing to play. But I kind of had this feeling when Valorant came out, because I'm a massive fan of like Counter-Strike, so I played like over 1,000 hours of CSGO, absolutely love it, and played lots of Overwatch when it came out as well. And when Valorant released, everyone was like, oh, it's like Overwatch and CSGO kind of mixed together. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool, like I'll give it a go. I still now, obviously Valorant's been out for a while, I still can't get like a handle on that game. There's so many different types of like smokes and colors and just things happening, and it's like I can't handle it. My brain can't take all of that in. Like,
yeah,
my brain is filled with like CSGO smokes, and you know, that's like sort of, I guess, as complicated as that game really gets. It's very much just like, you know, you need fast reflexes, helps if you know, have good game sense of the map, and you'll get that from playing lots anyway. But in terms of the actual gameplay, it's very like simple and straightforward. It's like you see the person, headshot, or if not, they will headshot you. Like, I think I do really enjoy Overwatch. I kind of like the chaotic sort of ness that you get with that. And I haven't played Overwatch 2 for a bit, but I do kind of want to go back to it now. They've just had like a big update, haven't they? Like, and Cardi sounds like he's having a good time. So, but yeah, like, I think with certain shooters, like, if it's got too much going on, I switch off from it a bit, because simplicity is nice sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I see those sort of like viral COD clips floating around on Twitter all the time, where it's a dude where he has a sensitivity set to like a trillion, and he's jumping around like he's fucking did a line of coke, and it just looks like in no way, shape or form a style that I would ever adopt if I wanted to get optimal playing Modern Warfare or whatever. Like, it's just not how I want to play. And I think when it comes to sort of like first person shooters or any sort of like competitive multiplayer things, I mean, usually like I enjoy more like PvE esque scenarios. Like, if I'm going to jump on Arma 3 with a couple of my buddies, then, you know, that's a first person shooter which we can play together, ready or not, like more slower paced things like that, that are still quite difficult to play, but you can play with your pals, still first person shooter, and can have a lovely time. But yeah, I completely agree with the menus and stuff. Like, for me, one of my biggest pet peeves is like sort of like the Destiny style menu, where I just can't use like the D-pads to shift around the menu, or I can't use like everything has to be an orb. Yeah. Everything has to be a little like pointer now. Like, just let me fucking move around the menu like a normal person.
It's
please.
Actually, it's why I'm not playing much Exoprimal, which I think is pretty good, but it's like orb menus. I don't like that I finish a game and I can't just press A to continue. I have to like move my stick down.
Well, like having to hold A to accept something and you have to like watch the bar fill when you're like trying to like select an outfit. I'm just like, I just get so angry. I'm like, I'm going to play some Baldur's Gate 3 because I just can't deal with this shit anymore.
I love that I get an opportunity to moan about this. I think that, so I've been playing Dave the Diver, which I think is really good and worth checking out, but it's got a like A button tapping mechanic for catching certain fish. And I just really wish it wasn't in there. Like, I can't be bothered to tap the button really fast to like. I just wish it was a thing that I didn't have to do. It like really switches me off.
That's the thing. Like, it doesn't offer much of a challenge. It's just like, just don't make me fucking do it. I'm here to chill out. This ain't Dark Souls or anything like that. And even that doesn't even really involve button mashing, you know. but hey, we're just a bunch of old people complaining about FPS menus now, you know.
Look at us.
Yeah, I know. Such a lovely time. But Rich, thank you so much for the feedback. And once again, and this time I'm going to get it right. If you want to send your own feedback, if you have your favorite Xbox 360 memories that you'd like to share with us, it is IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
Well done.
Yeah, it's been...
Good job.
Thank you so much. I know. Also, I think this might be the first podcast I've hosted.
Hey,
and I've been here for like 5 years.
That should be the
not
first
saying
email
that it wasn't allowed.
Sense. There should be. Yeah, I know. Did Jesse do a good job? And you're allowed.
And
to
the
say
answer
no.
is no. Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for all the feedback, everyone, and as well Matthew and Emma for joining us today.
Oh, I've got a suggestion. There is a really good cover of a Nina Simone song in The Saboteur. It's
Feeling
Good God. By Nina
yes,
Simone.
There is. Yeah, yes, there
we
is.
Have that cover.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's going to play, and hopefully good old Nina doesn't complain too much.
It's a cover. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's all good. It's all good. But guys, I would like to say goodbye.
See you next time.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.